Welcome to Mind Body Paws with Charlie Kale. Holistic living for you and your animals. You found your happy place to nurture your connection to animals with enlightening information from the innovators who make their world a better place. This is Mind Body Paws on Empower Radio. Now, here's your host, fellow animal lover, Charlie Kale.
Hello and welcome to Mind Body Paws, holistic living for you and your animals. This is show number 43, Disease Detecting Dogs and Autism Companions with Maria Godavage. I'm Charlie Kale, a passionate dog and cat mom, broadcaster and Reiki master practitioner in San Francisco at Energy Healing for People and Paws. I do distant healings and in-person sessions, people and animals, because energy transcends space and time. And you can find out more on my website, charliekale.com, charliekale.com. This is your safe place to honor animals, where we'll nurture our connection to them mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and once again, medically, because we're going to take another dive into all the amazing ways that highly trained dogs are detecting physical and emotional disorders and healing us too. My guest, Maria Godavage, stayed on for a second show. She has just released a brand new book called Doctor Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. And she's considered one of the foremost author experts on working dogs. She's a former journalist for USA Today. She's written three critically acclaimed New York Times bestsellers, Soldier Dogs, Top Dog, and Secret Service Dogs. And you've seen her on the Today Show, on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And she lives in San Francisco with her yellow lab, Gus, and her husband, Craig. Welcome, Maria Godavage. I laugh
Thank
about
so
that
much,
because he's not even in your bio, just your lab, Gus. So that's fine.
He's the one who's important in the book. So they said, yeah, just do Gus. That's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, with my apologies to Craig.
He can understand it. But we've been talking about your book that was just released, Doctor Dogs. And I'm a huge fan. It's an amazing book. It is so interesting. And I had said before, I told you I was a little intimidated by the subject matter because I knew there was going to be a lot of research and studies and scientific things I felt like I couldn't understand. But you have so many stories that take place all over the world because you traveled all over the world interviewing the people and their dogs. And so it's really a fun, fascinating read, and you write with such witticism and wonderful detail that I love your writing.
Thank you so much. I tried to make it entertaining as well as I tried to make the science easy.
You did.
I did the heavy lifting, and I had to understand it really, really well, and then I tried to present it so that it's an easy read, and the stories are really what binds the book.
It is. And Dr. Dogs is divided into three sections. So in the first section, you've got highly trained dogs who detect diabetic highs and lows, alert about seizures, cancer, Parkinson's. Then in section two, dogs tackling a new field of things such as sleep disorders, protecting us from antibiotic resistant bugs and epidemic catastrophes. And then in the third section, dogs who help with autism, mental health issues such as anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, PTSD, and then it even includes disaster relief dogs. So we left off where you were excitedly talking about the cancer detection dogs and dogs who aren't going to be in laboratories anymore.
Right. And when we say laboratories, we're not talking laboratories here. Like, think of the beagles in the cages. This is not at all the case.
The dogs
who are working to sniff out cancer in what we call laboratories, but really research settings, are pet dogs. Usually, they're pretty much pet dogs or foster dogs who will be pet dogs who will probably stay with the person they're with, who go home every day, and they hang out at home all, they have regular lives, and they go to work every day or every other day or whatever in these places around the world, and it's all fun to them. They are treated like royalty, and they learn to sniff out the smell of cancer. We don't know what that is yet, but dogs, if with enough training, can smell it out. So what they get is their paycheck, and they get their paycheck all the time is huge praise and a lot of love and usually a toy treat, because sometimes a little treat to eat, but it's usually a toy, and their play, they get to play, and they're told, they just love, they eat up their paycheck. And so that's what they're doing, and please no one think of laboratory settings with these horrible things. These are pet dogs who love what they do, and they just go in and they hang out and they do this and they go home and they look forward to it so much. These dogs are so excited to be doing this, and they don't know, I mean, I don't know if they know, but they don't seem to know what this stuff is that they're detecting. They just know, hey, if I smell this and sit and stare at it or stand and stare at it, I'll get a treat. So that's what I'll get a reward. So that's what they do. In the beginning, they do usually train them with some kind of little treats, and they maybe reduce their kibble a little bit that day. But they're incredibly good at sniffing out the scent of cancer, whether there is a signature smell for all cancers or whether each cancer has its own fingerprint, people don't know yet. But the dogs have been able to detect cancer in breast cancer, ovarian cancer, lung, bladder, liver, prostate, thyroid, I think a couple of others in these research settings, and on not on the actual tissue itself, but in samples of blood, or even breath, saliva, sweat, and dog's favorite, urine and poop, depending on on the one. So, you know, like the dogs probably would all sign up for the urine and poop detecting cancer jobs. But they do. I mean, the fact that they can smell it on exhaled breaths on these little balloons that have exhaled breaths is just, or masks even that have exhaled breaths, is just, it just blows me away. And this is just one step. And so I love that this is a time when dogs are teaching us something, and we're listening. In 1989, last segment, I talked about how the first dog was written about in a scientific journal. It was a pet dog who detected cancer on her person. But now we're you know, and the scientist who wrote about this, the doctor said, you know, we should maybe be looking at these. And he told me later, listening to these dogs, and we're doing that. And the dogs are leading scientists, and the scientists are working with the dogs to figure out what it is, what smell, what is this volatile organic compound, what is the scent that they are detecting, or the mix of scents that they're detecting that is cancer. And once they can figure that out with things like GCMS and other technologies, were the chemical analyses, they will be able to devise devices that we might be able to blow into, for instance, that will tell us if there's something that we need to look further into. So the dogs are a step in this direction. They're not, as I said in the last segment, they're not going to be, you know, in your hospital laboratory going around the cancer wheel sitting for each one, because they're not, that's not what dogs should be doing, and that is not reliable either. Dogs are dogs, or I like to say dogs are only human. But they, right. They get distracted. They make mistakes. They're really accurate when trained well, and the best the best practices are used when the person isn't in the same room or staring at the wheel where this stuff is. But the fact that they can do this is that they may be a step in the right direction of early cancer detection. I have skin in this game myself. We have a family history of ovarian cancer, and my mom died of it, and I recently found out about some other relatives in Italy who died of it. And so I don't have the genetic markers for it, but the doctors still think there's a hereditary risk. And there's no good early detection for this. There's no gold standard for ovarian cancer. It's usually detected too late to really do anything about it. Not always, but usually. And that is one of the things that dogs are detecting now at University of Pennsylvania. They are really, really good at detecting ovarian cancer signs in plasma of blood, because they take it down to the most basic level to get rid of any other scents that they might be getting. And in tiny ratios now, they're detecting like a drop of plasma with a drop of saline or something, so that they're seeing the lowest the dog can go, and they're detecting cancer really early. So the scientists will one day, hopefully not in the distant future, but maybe in the nearest future, learn from the dogs what that scent is, what those chemicals are that they're smelling, and devise these devices for us, and we will all benefit. And they hope that there'll be rapid tests, readily available and inexpensive. So thank you, dogs.
That's amazing.
Believe in them.
And extremely encouraging that they're being treated humanely and with love. I appreciate that much. Yes.
Yes, when we say laboratories, that is just a bad word.
Thank goodness.
Really. Well, that's a bad association. But it's not at all. It's like fun centers. Let's take the dog to the fun center where they'll sniff around this wheel is basically everything I've seen. Yeah.
And I have to laugh when you're talking about distractions such as poop, because we won't go into the study, but there was one where there were several different dogs, and the study happened to be taking place in a prison where they were having a sewage issue that day. And so, like, one of the dogs was so distracted by the sewage smells, she wasn't detecting what they wanted her to.
Yeah.
So, hey, you know, like you said.
I love getting that little nugget by reading the footnotes of science. You find these things out, because I thought, God, these other dogs did well. What was wrong with this dog? And then you find out, it was the sewage. It was probably the sewage, because she's normally really good. So, yeah.
There were 60 things she was probably detecting. She's going, ooh, I smell diabetes. I smell cancer. I smell this. I smell that.
Well, yeah, the dogs are very specialized. So, as I remember, she was the one in the diabetes study.
Right.
And so the diabetes dogs are just diabetes. The cancer dogs generally just have one kind of cancer they'll smell out. But, you know, there are some dogs who have been trained on two or three. They just want to make sure that the dog knows which one.
Yes, I mean, she was trained to respond to the diabetes, but I'm betting in that sewage she was smelling the whole litany of medical
prison.
And good and bad. Yes. So it was.
Dogs really are great. And I just love the fact that the other dogs, though, kept working. They're like, oh, I smell poop, but I'm going to keep working here. And she was like, oh, I smell poop. So that was her. She's an artist. Dogs bring their personalities into this field as well. And I know you wanted to talk about the sort of the middle part of the book as well, the last part of the book, which talks about dogs who help with mental health. And I think it's fascinating that they have been shown to be able to detect, to sniff out emotions. I know, you know, we were talking about energy.
Yes,
levels.
That emotions have a smell. I found that fascinating that scientists are thinking now that emotions have a smell, because I look at it as them connecting with the energy of the emotion. But beyond that, the emotion almost also emits a smell.
Yeah, and it's probably both. I don't really know much about the energy part, but the fact that that researchers are starting to realize that they've known for a while that fear has a smell, like the body produces a smell with fear. But there's a researcher saliva and sweat samples from people are sort of being looked at a few places in the world, especially Italy for some reason. Emotions, Italy, I'm Italian, so I can say that. But they're really fascinated with what dogs can smell. And they, in Indiana, there's a woman, a researcher who has a freezer and fridge stocked with emotions. So you open the door and there's anger, there's anxiety, there are a number of emotions, panic, fear, all related probably, that are taken from people, mostly people with PTSD, who are experiencing these emotions at the time. And she's training dogs. She and the others who work with her are training these dogs to respond to these emotions or these symptoms of PTSD for people with PTSD, mostly veterans, but not all of them. And so it's probably not necessary for the dog to smell this, to be trained to smell it, but it just adds another layer so that they are trained in general with a general sense of these from other people, S-C-E-N-T-S, from other people. And then when they get matched with their specific person, they're trained with that person's sense so that they can tell them ahead of time sometimes, like when they start smelling the smell before the person even realizes that they might be going down a bad path, they can stop and put their head on the person's lap or lean into them, be that heavy weight, be that presence they need to get through what might be about to happen. And I just love that we're in tune with dogs like this, what they can pick up on, and that science is picking up on this and helping people this way. There's also There's one dog I wrote about who was matched with, well, actually, it was the pet dog of someone who, a young woman who had schizophrenia. And I don't know if you got to that part yet, but the dog was able to help her by preventing her from cutting herself and some other things she was doing. Not really, he wasn't trained on scent, but he was trained on the body language, and I think he started being able to pick up on either the scent or I'm not really sure what else from this young woman, but just also by being a dog. The book is very heavily reliant on cutting-edge science, but also looks at dogs as dogs. By being there for her as her dog, he was able to not let her go so deeply into the hallucinations that she might normally get so fearful from. She had hallucinations from a very young age of very evil people, and visual and auditory hallucinations. And this is a dog who is a really friendly dog, big Labrador retriever, who wants to greet everybody, who will probably greet somebody trying to break into their house with a big wag of his tail. The fact that she started realizing that if the dog isn't greeting these people that she's hearing and seeing, that these people aren't real. So she can help her just by virtue of being a dog to differentiate between reality and these horrible, scary hallucinations, which is so beautiful. Yeah, it's not cutting-edge science, but it's something that shows us what dogs can do for us in ways that we haven't really thought of before.
Oh, but it is, because it's so much better than prescription drugs.
Right. I mean, she's on those too.
But it hurts
so much. And then just that this dog, I just love that she discovered this because her parents could tell her, "No, honey, there's nobody here." She didn't hear that. They could be just swept into this hallucination, but the dog never was. The dog was always separate and not seeing them. And so she would realize this, and then he'd come over and lie next to her and help her calm. Yeah,
that's so fantastic.
I love that story. Yeah.
And dogs are such a companion for children and adults with autism.
They're getting these jobs more and more to being autism companions. And much the same way that we've discussed PTSD, the dogs seem to know when the child is going to have a problem, meltdown, feel too overstimulated, and the dog will go up to the child as if to say, "You know, come over here. Let's hang out. Let's play. Let's just relax a little bit." And the child will start petting the dog and calm down. And the dogs seem to, again, no one has really done scent training work with the dogs. The dogs can probably sense something is going to hit the fan and seem to be able to stop things in their tracks. Out in public, so many people have issues with overstimulation, with noise, if they're shopping or something. And with autism, it's just too much. And just having the dog beside them can help them. But the dogs who are trained for this will sometimes just stop in their tracks and lean into the child or let the child pet them. Or if the parent is with them, they'll have the child sit. And the dog, if the child is already feeling overstimulated, will just be a presence, and physical presence, and that, you know, like weighted blankets can help with anxiety. The dog can weight the child down with its head on the lap, or sometimes just completely lean into the child. I have pictures of a child in the book who the dog just lies down and the child just hugs up against him. Like they're almost like they're zippered together. It's just so beautiful. And they may be in the middle of the aisle at Walmart, and this is happening, but the child isn't feeling the huge anxiety and then can get up and keep shopping. And the dogs they choose for this are very resilient dogs, because, you know, it's not an easy job. And they also make sure that dogs, you know, are protected if the child lashes out. This is the parents are directly involved, and the dogs are protected from the child. You know, if the child lashes out, the parents still might get the brunt of it. But when the dog walks in, I have a story of this child in the United States who was just, he couldn't go out anywhere. And once this dog walked into his life, Lloyd, it changed not only his life, but his whole family's life. Because the dog, with this dog, he was able to get his hair cut, go to the dentist, go to school, go to restaurants. They had a big binder in their home of takeout restaurants because they couldn't walk into a restaurant with this boy, and the dog completely changed that. So I just love how heartening these stories are. And I know you also wanted to talk about dogs saving the world in other ways with these these diseases, that these bacteria that are
like the superbugs. They sound like, oh yay, superbugs to the rescue, but not, more like the evil villain superbugs.
Right. No, but they like sniffing it out. Really gets to me how these dogs are helping us in so many ways. So on the super personalized level, like that boy with Lloyd and his autism, and then there's this element where, again, in the research centers, the fun research centers, where dogs are being trained on things like malaria. They can sniff out malaria they're sniffing at the socks of children in the Gambia. And they are able to detect which children have been affected by malaria and which haven't. And that one day can be used, they're hoping for, maybe at some point there will be dogs at airports to detect, do a quick screening of people coming through from into areas that have no more or have very low incidence of malaria, and the dogs will be able to help screen this out. And then if they do detect someone, the person can go for a quick screening for further, because you don't want to bring malaria into these areas that have been cleared. So, and then eventually, again, all this will eventually one day result in a device that can do this. But in the meantime, the dogs are there. In a Washington State island, it's Friday Harbor. It's a beautiful island, and they are detecting Parkinson's disease on T-shirts. So, and the goal is early Parkinson's detection, and the dogs get strips of turkey meat as their reward, and of course, lots of love. They're detecting MRSA, which are these antibiotic resistant things, and UTIs, C. diff, Clostridium difficile, I don't know how to pronounce that actually, and in hospitals. So UTIs, we don't really need dogs. Most people don't need a dog for that because it's really easy to detect with a urine test. But for those
early detection would be nice, so you don't have to let it get that far.
But I don't know exactly what that would be for the general population, but for those with limited mobility because of neurological conditions like paralysis, that's super important. They may have their dog there for themselves anyway as a mobility helper, and then on top of that, the dog can be trained to detect early UTIs because a lot of times, they have problems with this issue, and that could be really helpful. So there are all these things that are being worked on in laboratories. And again, laboratories being fun places for dogs to go for their day jobs and sniff these things out and get rewards. And it's amazing what the dogs will do. And in the laboratories, maybe they don't know they're really helping people, but certainly at home with all these, with the dogs who are doing this as pet dogs or as service dogs, they clearly know that they're helping. And you want to talk about cats too?
Yes. And I was just going to say, it's so much easier on our bodies too to have the dog detected first before going in for all these tests that you may not need, or that or jump to a test rather than having to do preliminary tests. It's like the dog is so much easier on our bodies. And my cat climbed in my lap and it's like, hello, you better get to Dr. Katz before this interview is over. So tell me about detecting cats.
They turn out to be pretty good detectors if they decide to be. They're cats, so it's on their own terms, with some notable exceptions with highly trained cats. But there are no trained doctor cats yet. But it's been shown that cats have certain olfactory anatomy that rivals dogs in some ways. Dogs probably are better in the long run, but cats are good, and they've been documented to warn people of low blood sugars. I don't know if you read about it in the book, there was a case where the cat tried to warn the man, but he went unconscious before so the cat went and got the girlfriend, and she was able to get him. He had slipped into this unconscious state. She was able to get him help, and the cat was an early warning signal to this man several times. The cats have also been noted to warn their people of cancer. This one cat was tapping and nosing into this woman's breast, you know, annoyingly so. And I think it was the husband who said, you should get that checked out. And she had breast cancer. Now, the same goes with dogs. Sometimes this could be coincidence. And, the cat was always nuzzling the breast or something. But usually it seems like there is something there.
And, yeah, it's more insistent.
Yeah, exactly. And cats, so I'm probably not, my next book is probably not going to be called Clinician Cats, just because, cats are more independent. And no one has really trained a dog that I know of, a cat, I should say, on the things that they're training dogs for. But I just love that there are these self-trained Dr. Cats out there. And I had to mention them occasionally in the book.
And I appreciate that. And then there are other animals getting into the Detection Act. Birds, fish, rats, mice, worms, fruit flies. It's amazing. And I'm so bummed that, again, we're out of time.
I saw cancer detection worms in China, in Japan when I was there. It was incredible. So we're harnessing we're not going to all have cancer detection worms in our houses. But they may lead to some interesting technology as well.
Right. So what is one last thing you would like to impress upon everyone?
Just love your dog and pet your dog and realize how amazing they are and how much smarter and more amazing than we could ever think they are. When I was first doing my research on war dogs, I realized that, wow, what they can do is so much more. And I've respected my dog even more since then. And, and listen to your dog. Listen to your dog because he may try to tell you something. He or she may try to tell you something one day. And every day probably, but something important one day.
Absolutely. They are connected to us and we are connected to them. Find out more about Maria Gudavich and her brand new book just released, Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. Find out more at mariagudavich.com. That's M-A-R-I-A, Maria Gudavich, G-O-O-D-A-V-A-G-E.com. And thank you for hanging out with me on Mind, Body, Paws, Holistic Living for You and Your Animals. I'm Charlie Kale. Check out my Reiki business, Energy Healing for People and Paws, in-person or distant healing sessions, people and animals, at charliekale.com. And find past shows on the website as well as on my page at Empower Radio. Thank you, Brent Carey, the founder and CEO of Empower Radio. Thank you, Remy Smith, in the studio in Detroit, both of you, for your love and support. Take care and remember that no matter what's going on with your animals, don't beat yourself up thinking you could have done better because you're doing the best you can. They know it and they chose you anyway and they love you for it. Mind Body Paws is a guilt-free zone. See you next time.